we need to do something and stop this.
Everyone does have their own views.
You can't just change the world by shopping.
Definitely something that you should relish.
What is wrong with young people today? Now, I'm not asking that question. That's a question being asked by a bunch of sexual health practitioners in Canberra. A new report shows a continuing increase in chlamydia and gonorrhea infections amongst young people. So today on the show, we're asking, what is wrong with us? We've got more information about safe sex than ever before. So why do rates of chlamydia keep going up? Is it that awkward to talk about safe sex or STI testing? Or are we just a bit complacent? Hello, I'm Tom Tilley with you for Hack, and you can sort of have your say on that issue later in the show. But first, to the front line of battle, where women will soon be able to serve in military combat roles. Today, the Defence Minister Stephen Smith announced that within 5 years, women will be able to serve in all military roles.
Last night, the Cabinet, with the full support of the service chiefs, formally decided to remove discrimination against women from frontline combat roles. Whether you're in the SAS, whether you are in infantry or artillery, your career, your role, your position will be determined upon your ability, not on the basis of your sex.
This will be based on work which is being currently done by the Defence Science and Technology Organisation in partnership with the University of Wollongong, determining what the physical employment standards are for the combat trades. That will determine, ultimately, what are the physical capacities that are required to do the work, and that's how people will be judged. Their physical and psychological capacity to do the work, not on their gender. And it will mean that in the future we may well see women leading, for example, infantry companies.
Warren Snowden, Minister for Defence, Science and Personnel, with Stephen Smith there, the Minister for Defence, announcing that policy today. One group that disagrees with the government's decision is the Australian Defence Association. They're an independent defence think tank and watchdog, and their spokesperson Neil James had this to say today.
The big issue is the risk of disproportionate casualties. You know, someone one day is going to have to stand up and face the people of Australia and explain why we're killing our female diggers in larger numbers than our male diggers unless we do this very carefully.
Former soldier and spokesperson of the Australian Defence Association, Neil James, speaking there. This is one of the rare occasions in politics where there is bipartisan support. Stuart Robert is the Shadow Minister for Defence, Science, Technology and Personnel, and he joins us to discuss the government's announcement. Stuart Robert, thanks for joining us on Hack.
Tom, my pleasure.
Stuart, you served in the Army. Do you think the government have made the right decision?
Well, this is the third time the government's announced it. So it's not new news. They announced it the first time last year and the second time during the Skype affair. So one has to question why they announced it again. Having said that, the coalition supports the wider engagement of women right across the Defence Force.
So you've got no problem with the actual decision?
No, not at all. We've made it very clear, as long as anyone in those roles, male or female, meets the physical or psychological requirements, and it doesn't affect combat effectiveness at all, we should indeed widen all roles to include women.
The Defence Association spokesperson Neil James says that the move will see women disproportionately killed in the front line. Do you agree with him?
Look, the ADA's got its own view on those things. If we look at similar experience overseas, especially in Canada, which has had a number of over 150 combat deaths in Afghanistan that had women serving in infantry units, indeed a female was a company commander in one of their infantry battalions, there is little experience of that, so there's no great knowledge of that happening. That did, of course, happen to Israel, or occur to Israel in 1948, in that women serving in the front line were specifically targeted by those they were fighting against, and that's a matter of historical fact.
You've previously said that other nations haven't done this because they've asked, is this where we want our sisters and our mothers and daughters to be? Is this debate about whether Australia can stomach women being killed in combat rather than their capacity?
There's no doubt the nation needs to be happy with sending their mothers and their sisters and their daughters into potentially dangerous zones working with combat units. But let's keep in mind that right now in Afghanistan we have women carrying weapons working in those 93% of the military that they are currently allowed to work in, some of them undergoing quite severe combat situations and acquitting themselves very, very well. We have women in combat right now.
But why did you raise that question, Stuart? What were you getting at with that question about whether we want our sisters and mothers and daughters to be in that situation?
Because when it comes to public policy debates, we actually need to sensibly debate the issues over time. We need to ask ourselves the question, is this where we want to go? And if the nation says yes, then great.
Have you spoken to any of your old colleagues about this decision? How are people inside the Defence Force responding to this policy announcement?
Well, the decision was only made 4.5 hours ago. The Labor met Cabinet last night and decided to make this decision. So there's been little time, I guess, to gauge public feeling or indeed feeling of the current military. I think the Minister is quite sensibly given a 5-year lead time to enacting this decision, because these things take time. If you look at the decision in the mid-90s for women to serve as fast jet pilots, well, it's been 16 years now and we don't have a single female flying a fast jet, and nor have we in the last 16 years. So it's all well and good to make a nice announcement. It's another thing to put it into practice.
Stuart Robert, thanks for joining us on Hack.
No, my great pleasure. Cheers.
On Triple J.
Stuart Robert is the Shadow Minister for Defence, Science, Technology and Personnel, and he was discussing the government's announcement to clear women to serve in combat roles. I'd love to know what you think. Do you think the government's made the right decision? Give us a call.
Hack 1300 055 36. Text 0439 757 555.
One comment that's come through on our Facebook says, stupid, putting the lives of other male soldiers at further risk. Another person says on the text line, it will bias field medics, putting more soldiers at risks. At risk. Adam, what do you think? You've served in the Defence Force.
Yeah, that's not my real name, but I'm just going to say that I've been in war before. And all I can say is that what we do need, if it was all-out war, and if it came to, let's just say, all-out World War III, that we do need our women to reproduce more people. The last thing we need is them in the front line getting themselves killed.
But I'm sure there'd still be women left back in Australia. Not all women would be fighting on the front line.
Let's just say it was all-out war. Let's just say it was World War III, and we had women on the front line. What's going to happen when they get their period and they need to go to the toilet and they have their women issues? That's not the thing that men need to be worrying about when they've got in the heat of battle. I don't think.
But don't men have issues as well that they would need to remove themselves from the front line to deal with at certain times during battle?
No, men don't have those psychological issues that women do. All I'm saying, like, I'm a wife and I respect her. The last thing I would, I couldn't imagine serving alongside battle with her.
Okay, Adam, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Another person who has a very well-qualified point of view is Ben Wadham. He was an infantry soldier and he's now a sociologist at Flinders Uni in Adelaide. Ben Wadham, thanks for joining us. What do you make of that last caller, Adam?
Oh, look, I think that if I take myself back to being 19 years old and in an infantry platoon, I think I might have had similar views that it would have been a difficult place to work with women. But, I don't think there's any real good reason for not including women in all combat roles at this point after the research I've done and the things I've seen.
So do you think he had any point whatsoever about special needs of women in that sort of situation, or even the psychological strength of women compared to men?
Look, no, I don't. I think the first thing is that the standards will be retained. In fact, they're going to be enhanced through this research with DSTO and University of Wollongong. So that effectively derails the capacity argument. Only women that can achieve the standards that are required will be there. And, I've worked with plenty of men that can't make the grade. And I've worked with women that can make the grade. So it won't be a lot of women, but there will be women that will be able to do that. And I just think when we start thinking about hygiene issues or women's specific needs, we're creating a bit of a red herring.
You're listening to Ben Wadham. He's a former infantry soldier and now a sociologist at Flinders Uni in Adelaide. And we're talking about the government's decision to allow women to serve in all combat roles. And only a handful of other countries allow women to serve in fully blown combat roles. And Australia will join them over the next 5 years. I'd love to know what you think. Do you think the government have made the right decision?
Hack 1300 055 36. Text 0439 757 555.
Johnson, what do you think?
Yeah, hi. I'd just like to ask the question whether, what's the difference between a male dying and a female dying when, they're saying we're going to send our mothers and sisters off to war, but we're already sending our sons and fathers off to war. How is there a difference between the two?
It's a very interesting question. That's one a lot of people have been asking today. Thanks for your call, Johnson. Ben Wadham, what do you make of that question? Do you think Australia will react differently to losing females in war?
Oh, look, I think that is true. But, you know, the argument's often played out in terms of a rights argument or a capacity argument. So women have the right to fulfil these roles, or women don't have the capacity to fulfil these roles. Well, I think that's a mask for actually what's a cultural argument. And we're talking about cultural values. And the fact is that the Australian community is still a very male-dominated environment. We still have quite, you know, strong masculine sort of values, which... filter through our community, and we see women in particular ways. And as a community, we are going to have to come to terms with seeing women in those roles. But as with other things that we've undergone with change, we'll come to terms with it. The question is that women have the right and are entitled to serve their country just as men are, and if they have the capacity, then they should be entitled to do that.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J, and we are talking about the government's decision to allow women into frontline combat roles. And it's fine for politicians and former defence personnel like Ben Wadham to give their expert opinions, but Sarah is someone that could potentially be in the firing line. Sarah's been an Army reservist for the last 4.5 years, and she joins us right now. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Sarah, apparently you're a crack shot.
Yeah, when I went through my basic training at Kapooka, I was actually the best shot out of my platoon.
What do you make of the government's decision today? Do you think they're doing the right thing by allowing women soldiers, potentially like yourself, you're a crack shot, to head into the front line?
I think it's a great decision. I'm all about equality of women in the Defence Force. So obviously not every female is going to want to go into those frontline positions, and I'm actually one of them. I wouldn't want to do it myself, but I believe that women should have the ability to try out for and go for those positions if they do want to do them.
Why wouldn't you want to do it?
I personally just, I don't want to put myself in the situation of being at the front line. It's an incredibly arduous and difficult position, and kudos to everyone that does it. I personally don't want to do it.
Do you have any friends that would? Have you spoken to them today after this announcement?
I have actually. One of my other female colleagues in the Army, I spoke with her about it, and she is absolutely ecstatic about it.
Right, we did joke that.
She might do, actually. We were joking about trying out for the SAS together and being the first female SAS recruits through, but we actually admitted that neither of us really want to do that. But she's keen to go into a frontline role, so it's something she might very well do.
Dino, you just came back from Afghanistan. What do you think about this decision?
Mate, I'm all for equality within the ranks as well, and no disrespect to Sarah. You know, being a good shot's one thing, but actually being there is a completely different situation, like she highlighted, mate. You know, over there, you know, I took on the understanding that if I got caught behind enemy lines, mate, I'll be dead for sure, but it's so much worse for a chick. You know, they have openly said that they won't, if they capture women, they won't kill them, they'll keep them alive. You know, I don't have to obviously go into the details about what they're like.
Yeah.
Mate, I can't speak, you know, wow. The place is absolutely hell on earth, mate. Like, I can't, obviously, I'm one of the two full-time regiment, I'm at the 2nd Commando Regiment in Sydney, and we don't do the regular sort of thing. It's just crazy over there, mate. To even consider putting women in the places we go is absolute madness.
Apart from what the enemy would do to the women, Dino, why else do you think that women shouldn't be put in that same situation that you've been in?
Mate, for a couple of reasons. If you've got women in the ranks too, you know, there's always going to be that complacency where blokes being blokes, you know, you're away from your family for 6 months of the year, you're going to be, you know, you won't be focused on the job for one, you know, whether they like it or not, it's going to happen, mate. We're all human, you know what I mean?
What do you mean, what's going to happen?
Oh, mate, you know, there's males and females living in the desert, you know.
Okay, they're going to hook up, and you think that'll create tension within the group?
Yeah, tension, not only that, but just, you know, you're not focused on the job, you know. Like, blokes are blokes, girls are girls, they're going to do that sort of thing. And if you're not, you know, if you're not focused on where you're heading and the mission at hand, well, you know, it's a bit... what are you doing there sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Okay, Dino, let me put that situation to Sarah. Sarah, what do you make of Dino's point there? Do you think people hooking up would be a problem in a war situation?
I see where he's coming from, and obviously that is something that could happen, and I've heard of stories that it does happen over there. There are women involved in Afghanistan, obviously, and there are women over there already. It's really the elite forces that don't have those females around them, but I think men are made of tougher stuff if they're disciplined in their training, and you know, they're there to get the job done, and that's one of the arguments that comes up, is that you know, we're there to do a job. It's not about whether women should be there, it's getting the job done. I think if they're over there for those reasons, then they're going to be able to focus on the task and not worry about the brunette sitting next to them.
Dino, what do you make of that? You don't think soldiers would have enough discipline? I mean, they're already very disciplined that they could stop themselves from, as Sarah says, hitting on the brunette next to them.
Mate, I'm full-time. I don't know what the reservists do, mate. So, like, you know, it's a completely different side of the fence where I'm coming from. You know, I do it every single day of the week. It's not just, you know, weekends and stuff like that. So as for discipline, yeah, whatever, mate. If you do it long enough, everything's got complacency.
Dino, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts and your experience with us on Triple J.
Cool, mate. Cheers.
That was Dino. He's just come back from Afghanistan serving there. And I have Sarah in the studio, and Sarah is a reservist who's very happy at the government's decision to allow women into combat roles. What do you make of Dino's comments there about discipline and comparing reservists to people, you know, serving in the army?
There's always a bit of to-ing and fro-ing with reservists and full-timers, which has its own story behind it. I mean, basically, we're on the same team. We do the same job. We might not do it Monday to Friday like a full-timer does, but we're still doing the same work and we are deployed as well. But, you know, I think arguments that come up as to why women shouldn't be in the front line, I think these are things that we should look at overcoming rather than looking at them as reasons not to have women there.
Mandy, you didn't join the army because you weren't able to serve on the front line.
That is correct. I was not interested in the Defence Force because I wouldn't be able to go where I wanted to go. I wanted to be in the grit. I wanted to be in the front line.
So are you thinking about joining now?
No. I'm now 24. I've applied for uni. My life has gone in a different way. I was actually thinking of joining the Army when I, or the front line, sorry, the Defence Force, when I was around about, you know, 16 to 17, and I can't. For obvious, and I couldn't back then, I didn't for obvious reasons. So I think it's about time, and I think it's really good now that women are being accepted in the for the front line, because you will find women, we're not all delicate flowers that need to be handled carefully. We should be able to be given the choice to go on the front line.
Mandy, thanks so much for your call.
Not a problem.
A few people have texted in. One person says, I'm in the army, and if a chick was good enough, I'd be proud to work beside her. Another person says, sisters, mothers, well, we don't want our brothers and sons and fathers in the front line either. It's a moot point. That's Belinda from Brisbane. Another person says, the biggest problem with women serving is men not being able to cope with them being blown apart. Dave, and listening to this discussion, is former soldier Ben Wadham, who's also now a sociologist. Ben Wadham, what do you make of the discussion, and particularly Dino's points about what the enemy might do to women if they found them on the front line?
Yeah, look, I think that there's obviously a kernel of truth to that position. However, you know, women are will be given the information that they require to make the decision. I mean, they're quite capable of making good decisions for themselves, and I think that they'll make a decision based upon the evidence available to them. If they're concerned about that, then I guess they might not make that choice. But, you know, on other elements about men being distracted or women contaminating the platoons or whatever, I think that one thing you have to understand is that, you know, I mean, we could make the point that women might be more concerned about entering the infantry battalion than about actually going on front line. An infantry battalion's a very profoundly masculine domain, and it's based upon a very strong sense of group solidarity. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of support networks and things in place if women are going to make that transition successfully.
Yeah, I'll put that question to Sarah, actually. Sarah, final question for the discussion. Do you think that cultural shift will be difficult and take time to allow women into these previously male-dominated spaces?
I think it'll definitely take time. It's not something that you can snap your fingers and have everybody accept it. And we've done it over history. Like, women never used to be in the police force. We never used to be serving in some of the roles we are in now in the Defence Force. But over time, we get used to things and we come to think that that's the way that things are and the way that they should be. I mean, if we look back at when women didn't have the vote, we think now that that's absolutely ridiculous. So, you know, in 10 years' time, we'll see women on the front line and we'll accept that as being normal because we've grown to accept it.
Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Sarah is an army reservist. And Ben Wadham, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Ben Wadham is a former soldier and now a sociologist at Flinders Uni. And thank you for all your texts and comments on that issue. One person says, I'm sure women are ready for the Defence Force, but are men. That's Johnny. Thank you so much. You are listening to Hack with me, Tom Tilley, and that was a very interesting discussion. If you weren't able to get your text read out on air or get your call on air, please, you can continue the discussion on Facebook. Jump onto Hack on Triple J, the Facebook page, and you can start a thread there and continue the conversation. And remember, if you ever miss Hack, you can always sign up for the podcast and get your daily dose downloaded to your computer. Just a quick question for you. Have you got chlamydia? No? Well, are you sure? Up to 1 in 20 young Australians do, and many of them have no idea. Research out today is giving a national snapshot at the sexual health of the nation. It's shown pretty scary levels of people being infected with chlamydia and gonorrhea. As Irene Scott finds out, researchers say it's an epidemic.
Chlamydia has continued to rise relentlessly. We have had almost 75,000 Australians diagnosed with chlamydia last year.
That's David Wilson, a researcher from the Kirby Institute at the Uni of New South Wales. He worked on this year's national snapshot of how the health of Australia, in the downstairs department, is tracking. He says in the last year, the rates of people infected by chlamydia jumped up a whopping 17%.
We really do have an epidemic of chlamydia. We have about 5% of all young Australians with chlamydia, but we're still not detecting the vast majority of those. Most of them remain undiagnosed. To put that into context, that's much more than any other condition.
And that's compared to the other notifiable diseases, like tetanus, malaria, TB, and all the HEPs. And especially for females, chlamydia can be serious stuff.
We just don't notify, we don't diagnose all of those cases. The vast majority remain undiagnosed. And that's not surprising considering the infection is asymptomatic. That is, most people are not aware that they actually have the infection. And over time, what's going to happen is the inflammatory response from the immune system will lead to some scarring. And that scarring will eventually lead to infertility, particularly in women. Men do have symptoms, not as many symptoms as in women. If left undiagnosed, it can lead to epididymitis. Effectively, that means pain in the balls. But it can also lead to reactive arthritis. It can be a very serious condition.
And the figures are worse for Indigenous Australians, who have around 3 times the infection rate than non-Indigenous people living in cities.
By and large, I think it's due to a lack of funding that's provided in terms of basic prevention messages, education, and also lack of access to a lot of basic healthcare infrastructure that we have in many urban centres.
And there were surprises among the other STIs. New gonorrhea cases jumped 25%, and researchers are worried about a growing resistance to the drugs used to treat it. Plus, the levels of sexually transmitted infections in the gay community also saw a rise.
Chlamydia rates are a little bit higher. Gonorrhea is much higher in the gay community, and HIV is also very substantially higher.
But there was some good news amongst the report. After the free cervical cancer injections, rates of genital warts in females have dropped significantly, and the levels of HIV infections in Australia have remained steady.
Chlamydia should be simple to control. People can get tested regularly. It should become part of our normal lives. Chlamydia is quite prevalent. You know, it's a reality of our current lives.
That's Professor David Wilson from the Kirby Institute at the University of New South Wales speaking to Irene Scott.
Hack with Tom Tilley on Triple J.
And one of the issues that comes out of this report is the importance of having that awkward conversation about STIs when you first start hooking up with someone. I'd love to know your experiences of talking about STIs with your partner or partners. At what stage into seeing someone do you ask if they've been tested for STIs? It's a very hard question, but when do you ask it? Is it before you have sex, or is it when you want to stop using a condom? Give me a call.
Hack. 1-300-055-536. Text 0439-757-555.
Linda Carlisle hears about people that don't have that chat and what can happen. She's a sexual therapist. Linda, welcome to Hack.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. It's a very hard one to talk about sometimes, but you and I are professionals. I'm sure we'll be fine. What do you think of this study and the rates of chlamydia that are continuing to climb?
the rates have been climbing for the last 10 to 15 years, so it's at a stage now where it really is a concern, and particularly amongst, obviously, young people, but also amongst baby boomers, because they're coming out of long-term relationships, obviously not our demographic, but
okay,
well,
when our parents get back on the scene kind of thing, is
exactly,
that what you're talking about? Right, okay.
Exactly.
Let's move on from that.
So whatever age, it's essential that you have to feel comfortable to talk about it, to ask your partner about it.
Now, when people come to you, they're probably having either problems or sexual health problems. Do they tell you about when they bring this up in their relationships?
Yeah, it is something that I get asked about. People feel awkward, especially if they've had an STI themselves, so they worry about how they're going to tell a prospective partner. But ideally, that conversation really needs to happen in that case before you have sex, and ideally in all cases before you have sex.
So how do you tell people to break it to people if they have an STI and they need to get it out in the open straight away?
Well, it's so common these days. It's just one of those conversations that you need to have, and the alternative is that the person is having sex with you when you haven't disclosed, and that's obviously going to be worse than if you do disclose and they don't want to see you. At least they have the choice.
Rebecca, when do you have the conversation about STIs?
Well, when I've been with a serious partner, we kind of don't talk about it initially, but when you're sort of discussing unprotected sex, there's absolutely no way I would do that without having a discussion. And then I would actually kind of sort of say to my partner, I think we need to go to our GPs independently and actually get tested. And I wasn't as crazy as sort of like making sure I checked their results. But
okay, that line's breaking up there, Rebecca, but that's a very interesting point. I'll put that to Linda Carlisle. Linda, is that a common approach, only talking about it once you stop wanting to use condoms in a relationship?
Some people do, and if it hasn't started, if you haven't had the conversation before you've started having sex, then you definitely need to have the conversation before you make a commitment to be, I'll use the term fluid bonded, which is essentially
that
people decide that they'll enter into a special agreement in which they'll have fluid exchanging sexual encounters, and obviously don't do that with other people. So there's responsibilities that is attached to that.
One person's texted in on 0439 75 7555. They say, I always ask the question before hooking up. It's an extremely important question. Well, Louise, it's not so easy for you.
No, it's not always easy. It's like when you do it and the person doesn't automatically reject you, which is the hardest part. You know, like they respect you more because you were honest with them, and it generally leads, I guess, to better times and stuff. And
okay, like Louise, are you talking about a situation where you actually do have an STI that you need to bring up?
Yeah, I have genital herpes. So, it's just always, I've had it for about 8-9 years, and it's just always been my policy to bring it up before, I guess, the heat of the moment, so that they can make a rational decision.
And what do most people do in that situation?
I would say that most people will just want to talk a little bit more about it before they even make that decision. But a lot of people, yeah, I still get a lot of rejection, like from potential partners, I guess.
Yeah, I guess when you've got that condition, it's absolutely imperative that you bring it up straight away. Louise, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
No worries.
Linda Carlisle, what about the situation where no one suspects the other party of having an STI? Is it equally as important as Louise's situation there?
Of course it is. We tend to have this magical thinking, or we justify to ourselves that, you know, they look like a nice person, or they look clean and healthy, or they haven't had a relationship in a long time. Nice people have sex. Most STIs are silent. People don't know that they have them, and STIs can lay dormant for a long time. So,
yeah. Linda, the final question, this is the one the researchers are asking. What is wrong with us? Why are we getting this wrong?
I think that people don't think about what they're going to do before they have sex. And once you get into that heat of the moment, then we lapse from our usual level of intelligence and responsibility. And we just have to take that time out before we start to think about how we're going to approach it.
Linda Carlisle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
That's Linda Carlisle. She's a sex therapist. And one person has texted in saying, I always use protection, even if they say they've been checked, because how do you know for sure? That's Danny out of Melbourne. Thank you so much for all your calls and texts on that topic. That's all we have time for. Carried on Facebook if you've got more to say. We'll be back tomorrow at 5:30, bringing you the stories that matter. Rosie Beaton is up next. Get on the phones, give you your requests, 1300 055 36. Catch you tomorrow.